Blog
everyone, this is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Queen Mary psychic and paranormal researcher Peter James. He was best known for his role as a weekly psychic correspondent on the Fox hit primetime series Sightings back in the 90s. But if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have the show or format or any leg to stand on, really. But you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli Show. I want to start off by thanking Rob Sarek. He's the founder and creator of LifeParanormal.com, and without him, there wouldn't be this format as well. So I'd also like to thank Mr. Savalon, Carla, Lexi Doyle, and Claude, who has just joined the chat room as well, for all of their help as moderators and really making this run smoothly without the glitches and everything. And I'll be fielding the chat room, taking questions, and... Again, you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, so without any further ado, I'd like to bring her on. And as well, I'd like to let everybody know, too, that she now has a monthly column in Haunted Path magazine, and she is going to be under the heading Child Side of the Paranormal with her views of the paranormal as well. And for other kids that have a, you know, with the ongoing current fascination in the field and avenue, she's going to continue her work with helping kids as well and other families with home haunting activity. LiveParanormal.com, if you go and register with Live Paranormal, like Live Paranormal, register with Paranormal.com, certainly, and you're eligible to win some great prizes. There's a big giveaway that's coming up. Tweet LiveParanormal.com. There's prizes that are going to be given away by Alexandra Halzer, the daughter of the late Dr. Hans Halzer, famed parapsychologist within the field. And it's a book that he worked on with his daughter, and as well his final book that he had before he passed away. And as well, there's going to be DVDs by the Booth Brothers and signed items. We're donating Heaven Can You Hear Me by Peter James and signed by myself and your host, the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli. So certainly there's more prizes from TAPS, Ghost Adventures, and it's the grand prize. I want to tell you more. There's just a lot more on the list of people submitting daily within the field, experts, cable talents, hosts, and yeah, it's going to be quite the package. So really go there, register with LiveParanormal.com. On their homepage, it'll tell you all the specifics and instructions. As well, StuCon 2, that's coming up August 6th, and that will be at Linda Vista Hospital. And it's $2 to get in, a dollar for an investigation as well in the evening. And, yeah, that's Scott Grunewald. If you go to him, friend him, and go to the specifics on the hosted page for the event, StuCon 2, certainly coming up. That's going to be a great one here in the L.A. area, or if you have some travel plans. Without any ado, the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, Dad. Thank you, everyone, for coming to my show.
Now, do you have any plans this summer? Any other events or things you want to plan on doing?
Nothing I really know of because dealing with this show is a lot to think about.
Right. No,
you
it's...
Know,
it's a lot of research. It's something a little new. It's something that I know that, you know, going to school for broadcasting, you have to kind of fill things in along the way. But what I want to let everybody know, too, is that we're going to be playing some personally gathered EVP that we caught aboard the Queen Mary from our personal home haunting activity. But as well, joining us shortly is going to be parapublicist Dawn Shy. And she represents the Booth brothers, Michael and Marty Perry, and other celebrities. And she's going to be joining us shortly as well. And coming up, we have famed author, historian, lecturer, and pioneering paranormal investigator, and that's Richard Sennett. He's good enough to join us again. And if you tuned in for the last show 3 weeks ago, you know that we had so many more questions. And Richard has a way of talking, speaking that every historian should. And that is in a way that is engaging and in a way that just holds you captive to just every word that he has to say. He paints pictures with his words, and we're glad to have him on. So everybody, hang tight for Richard Sennett. He's coming up, and of course, Dawn Shy. But first, we're going to play some things that we captured aboard the Queen Mary, and I was finally able to figure out how to load them in the queue, and there's no glitches today. So that should be something special for us to do. And if you want to tell us a little bit about the backstory, like how did everything happen for you with the Queen Mary and what we did that night to get EVP?
What I wanted to mention is coming up, there's an event at La Parisma Mission I'm going to. It's August 23rd, right?
I'm looking at the calendar right now. It's next Saturday, August 23rd, and it's hosted by Sid Schultz of TAPS Paranormal Boot Camp. And, we're going to ask Richard Sennett, certainly, too, more of the history on the La Parisma mission for anybody else that's attending the boot camp as well next Saturday. And as well, you're going to be broadcasting live, asking questions for event attendees, and as well for some of the experts in the field that will be joining and coming on as well.
So we hope to see you there.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the event. And, you know, that's the thing. I want to talk to Richard Sennett and just really ask him a lot of the specifics. And he has so much more that he had to say about La Parisma, and we had to kind of move along and get to some of the other missions and universities, hospitals, libraries, things that he's investigated in the Ventura area. But now we have some more specifics to ask him and some things, some keynote names and some monks at the mission. There's even animals at the mission, too, that are reportedly seen around, and greyhound dogs and various things. And so we're going to kind of pick his brain on that. And, you're still there. Oh, you're still there. I got you in the queue. Oh, you lost signal. Okay, we'll call back in. You know the switchboard number. And for all of you, too, that have any questions out there, feel free to call in 619-639-4606 to speak with the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli. I'm making my way back into the chat room. I had to kind of go through here and get the music beds and everything up and going. But now I'm back in there. Feel free to put any questions you like in the live chat room. And again, 619-639-4606. If you have any questions for the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, we'll take them live. And let me bring you back. There you go. I got you back in the queue.
Sorry about that, everyone. I lost signal for some reason. I really don't know why.
Yeah, maybe just keep it away from that electrical right there or something. That might have did it. But let's see here. Let me get into the chat room, see if we have any questions.
Not right now, Dad. I'm also filling the chat.
You're over there. We'll see. Because of the glitches last week, I had your laptop set up as a backup because I had all these fatal errors and I got bumped off the line. And so I couldn't even get to the music beds, the switchboard to bring people on or anything. So I apologize that in advance. It was about the first 5 minutes of the show. But everything's going good now. And, again, we got Dawn Shy coming up shortly and Richard Sennett. But, certainly attend those events if you're in the Lompoc area. That's around Santa Maria, San Luis Obispo area up north of California for Sid Schultz TAPS Paranormal Boot Camp. And that's next Saturday, and StuCon coming up the following weekend in the L.A. area, Linda Vista Hospital in East L.A. But just some backstory, like on the Queen Mary. That night, This is roughly going on about 2 years ago. It was myself. It was you. It was, you know, my wife, your mom, Shirley.
Peaches.
That's my wife's girlfriend, Peaches. And there was also
Cassie.
Our niece. Yeah, from Chicago, Cassie. And we're on the Queen Mary, and we're in the propeller box area. We had some other kind of interesting things happen during the night, and we were just kind of on the self-guided tour. And it was literally like a ghost town, a ghost ship that day. So we knew we were, like, really the only people in that area. It's something that, like, you know, you kind of have to find on the tour. And so it's a place of interest for me because Mike Luke captured some great EVP in there, and it totally made sense to me because where Peter James felt that Jackie, the pool area talking ghost child, initially drowned was in the second-class swimming pool. And a lot of people don't know that. They think from the Fox sightings footage and that vocalized communication with Jackie that she drowned in the first-class swimming pool, and that's, of course, the April of 1991 footage of Peter James communicating audibly with Jackie for the show. And he actually got her to sing along with him. In December of 2008, Planet Paranormal, Bob Davis's group, he and his teammate Brian Clune captured a 17-minute vocalized communication with Jackie as well, and it just kept going and going. So she's still there, very much aboard the ship. Peter tried to get her to move on several times, but for whatever reason, she refuses to move on and stays around. So we just picked this location because the second-class swimming pool where Peter initially discovered her, but she wanted him to meet her in the first-class swimming pool, and he didn't quite understand that because today, where that second-class swimming pool is converted into the Royal Theater. So it looks like a theater, there's seats, there's a stage, and it looks nothing like its former self as the second-class swimming pool, and Peter was confused by that, his first visit to the ship. And then a guard let him know, no, this used to be the second-class swimming pool. It's where Peter James believes that she drowned, but she travels back and forth to the first-class swimming pool via a vortex. And it's a place that's very close to Jackie because she preferred the splendor and the grandeur of the first-class swimming pool in Peter James's assessment. And so it just made for the perfect place for us to think, well, let's try an EVP session. Everybody's kind of passed through. There's nobody on the upper floors. And it looked good. So, you know, we kind of did an EVP session. And did you want to say anything that happened? Did we hear anything at the time?
I vaguely remember it. Because we've gone on so many investigations, it's hard to just say one investigation that I've done. I've done so many, I could get them mixed up. It's just fun to see what news happening.
Well, yeah, it was one of those days, nothing really sticks out in your mind when you go to do an investigation. I mean, yeah, we had, you know, Cassie there. We visited the ship a few times while she was out. She just got so attached to it, and of course, because of this and the evidentiality that we caught, it was a place we were just kind of visiting a lot during that week. But this day in particular, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the conditions, but the propeller room area is typically filled with water, and you can walk around the propeller shaft areas. There's an area welded onto the aft end of the ship where you can walk around and look down into the propeller box. And I didn't know it was capable of doing this, but for repair on the large propeller, and, you know, for if they were doing electrolysis kind of removal and cleaning up the propeller blade, they completely pumped out all the water in the propeller box area. So it was completely empty. There's images of it at myspace.com/PeterJamesLives, and we have photos from that night of us looking down into the propeller box area that was completely drained of water. And because of that, I don't know if it's, you know, synonymous to, like, when the Wolf Manor started adding on to the location and putting other rooms and doing construction, the activity increased quite a bit from, you know, all reports from Scott Gruenwald. And it's something that maybe if it was something that used to be there, then suddenly displaced, it might have, you know, brought forth some activity. Certainly, we heard nothing at the time. You could hear a pin drop. There was just some water driplets, you know, a drop here and there. Every once in a while, a pump would click, and you would certainly hear that. But it was everything in between us. We came back that night. We just did like a quick little EVP session, just continued on our way, walked through the aft part of the ship, and then back out. But it wasn't until we got home, and, you know, after dinner, I just thought, okay, I'm going to go in here and see if we caught anything. I've never done an EVP session before at that point. Plugged it into the audio editor, and I was shocked at what we got. We got multiple voices in between ours, over ours, and it was all there at that one moment during like a 2-minute 30-second session in that propeller box area. And if you do go to myspace.com/PeterJamesLives, there's a dedicated blog that I put there, and there's a reason why. There's a voice on there that very much sounds like Peter James, and it says, "Speak to me." And that was something that was very much of something that Peter incorporated into really coaxing and communicating with entities on his show Sightings. And it was something that he did quite a bit for Jackie and aboard the Queen Mary and on his tours that he founded aboard the Queen Mary. But as well, there was voices that referred to Jackie by name. Now, there's things that anger Peter's family, his former team investigative members that while Peter was alive, and his friends, that there's rumors going around the ship by ship employees that currently give tours that are saying that Peter was a ventriloquist, could throw his voice. He was Jackie all those years, even though we've been aboard and we've heard Jackie audibly out loud, and you can't miss her name out of anywhere. You know, having a daughter myself, I could pick her out of a crowd, and that's the same for Jackie. And so it's something that really agitates Peter's family that those rumors do go around there, and that, you know, that's theories and conjecture that are people passing that around. But to hear voices in between hours that refer to Jackie by name was something quite a bit different. And so I encourage you to go there and listen to the unedited. I mean, none of this is edited, but I have here the cut segments of what those sections are from that EVP session. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback in my ear. But yeah, there was something just kind of different about that night. We've done EVP sessions there since. The water's been filled back in the propeller box area, and we've had tap replies. We've had, you know, whistles in between us and other groups and things in that area that really can't be explained as well. But this was something just, you know, quite unique and different. I very much feel, because of the conductivity of the saline, of all the salt water surrounding that area, and because of the area that Peter believes that Jackie actually drowned in, was in that area, that, yeah, she's very much a part of that area. And apparently other people are aware of that area as well, as we'll play in this EVP. But with that in mind, I'm going to play the EVP for you, and it's quite spectacular in its own right, and something that I couldn't sleep the rest of the night after hearing it. And, you know, everybody gone to the bed at that point, but I wanted to wake up the whole house and go, everybody get in here and listen to this. But, you know, it was something shocking to me. They referred to Jackie by name. Peter felt initially when he talked to Jackie that she was caught when he talked to her on the first class swimming pool area on top and on the upper banister of the second level. And that's always been something that people have picked up on, other psychics, that Jackie was caught. And you'll hear the references here as well when I ask about that specifically. And I don't have that a part of this, but you can hear in the full take at the MySpace, Peter James Lives. But in referring to that, you hear several voices say, "Jackie, hold on. Jackie wants to speak with you." Like, no, she's very much here. She's not caught. We want to bring her forward, type of thing. When I first heard it, I didn't hear the wants to speak with you part at the end of the person with the accent, and I just heard, "Jackie, hold on, Jackie." And when I heard that, it kept me up all night because I felt that it was referring to her drowning and people reviving her. And there's a woman that shrieks as well in here that just shrieks, "Jackie." And it's something that, yeah, it's giving me chills now. But I'm going to play those for you now. Yeah, just in a moment, Dawn Shy is going to be coming on, joining us. She's a parapublicist to the experts within the field. And as well, Richard Sennett will be joining us as well with his history of California. And you have to stay here for that. You really have to hear Richard Sennett and Dawn Shy. But right now, I'm going to play you this EVP. And as is, as just merely cut, no time delays, any kind of effects added or any type of effects. This is simply pulled from the original. You're going to hear someone that sounds like Peter right off the bat say, "Speak to me." And then you hear me say, you know, something just prior to the cut that's, "Oh, that was Sophia," referring to her, just maybe asking me a little question. And then you hear the two men. There's one with an accent that says, "Jackie." And then you hear one in the middle that sounds like an old-time guy voice going, "Hold on." And then you hear the man with the accent right after again say, "Jackie wants to speak with you," with an accent. And then you hear little shrill voices, like a female voice. You'll hear some things in between there. There's even a little kid that says, "Let me out of here." And I'm going to play those for you now. But listen for that again. Right here in the beginning, "Speak to me," you'll hear my voice, and then you'll hear the "Jackie, hold on, Jackie wants to speak with you."
That was Sophia.
Jackie?
I'll play that again for you. I don't know if that was a little bit too resonant on this. It is over our phones, but I'm not sure what it's like live. So, yeah, I know that that's us over the phones, but I don't know what the audience is hearing. I know that when we listen to the archive shows, which you can as well, and this will probably maybe be much clearer for you during that, but in the archive shows, you can hear things pretty clear. But on our phone end, it doesn't sound as vibrant. Can people post in the chat room if it seems clear to them? Could they hear that, or did it seem garbled? Because I could probably lessen the intensity on this. Or feel free just to put in their K, you know, if it's good or louder or distorted, you know, then I can, like, bring down the levels. But during that, I'll just go ahead and replay it just a slightly higher volume if it is clear, and then people can hear that for themselves, just without the distortion.
I said somewhat, not too clear.
Oh, not too clear. Let me play it again, and then I'll do it a third time.
That was Sophia.
Jackie? So clear.
Yeah, again, we're on the phones, and even in the intro music, it's really overbearing, and, you know, I can't really make out when the end of the intro music is, when it really goes into the heavy part, but, you know, the listeners and the audience, they have something different. The other thing is put on headphones, too, when you hear EVPs, and sometimes things are clearer as well, but I'm going to do it at a slightly lower volume, and maybe you can, like, boost your speakers and hear it at this point, and it may take out some of that distortion that might be interjected, but yeah, here's the clip. I'm gonna go ahead and play it again, but yeah,
we're having, you guys said, still not clear.
Still not clear. Okay, we'll try it at this volume rate. That may take some of the distortion out, and then if once it starts out, maybe you need to just up your speakers just slightly. We'll see.
That was really distorted. It cut out.
I did, huh?
Jackie?
Yeah, the volume that the that was Shirley's friend Peaches spoke at, that's how loud we were. You can hear my voice, you can hear hers. It was the subtle voices in between ours that were, you know, quite a bit alarming to have those in there. But, you know, that's certainly them. I'll try it at this volume range, and this should hopefully be clear. Hopefully. We'll give it a try.
That was Sophia.
Jackie?
That
Jackie?
Yeah, right. I'm hoping that didn't seem too distorted on that take. That was about as mid-range as I could get on that. And again, maybe in the replay on the maybe it's something that there's the live chat room. There might be something in the toggling. And so hopefully that came out clearer for everyone. And let's see. I'm going to play one here that sounds like hopefully clearer, if not on that end. There was at one point when I was asking if people were holding Jackie, is that people have been saying that for so many years. Is that something that's true? Is anybody holding Jackie? We heard almost like a choir of people say, "We're not holding Jackie." And here's that EVP as well.
River Avenue, they said it, even with headphones, it still gets distorted.
It's still distorted. Okay, I just got in the chat room, the River, our friend Don, he said that it's still a little distorted. And, you know, I see these little levels here, real finite on how they jump up and down into the red range, which shows distortion. I'm trying to bring them just a little bit below that peak range and keep everything clear. So let's try this one again. It sounds like a choir just at once saying, "We're not holding Jackie." Try it just slightly below that one, just in case it comes out a little clear because of that little difference. It sounded like more females to male in that choir, but it just sounded like, "We're not holding Jackie." And that was something that kind of answered a lot of questions for me, because that was always something that other psychics other than Peter always felt too, that she was trapped or caught, or that someone was always keeping her at bay or holding her back from interacting with other people, possibly Sarah. And that was somebody that Peter had to warm up to, because she would constantly burn him, slap him, push him, shove him. And that was something about Sarah that was, he felt, a protector of Jackie in the afterlife and possibly a nanny at one point. And then, of course, Jackie allegedly drowned. This is one that sounds like a little kid saying, "Let me out of here." Oh, good. So let me look for that level. I got something up. Our friend Spook Manor let us know that was a little clearer. So I'm going to try to keep things in this range. Again, here's the one that sounds like, "Let me out of here." Try that again. Hopefully that was clear for everyone. Try at that range again. I mean, from my end, again, distorted over the phone, I'll see if it sounds a little bit better, because, yeah, everything's grainy within the sound beds from this end, so we'll try it. Okay, there's another one that was interesting. People say they can hear that one.
His mayor said good level.
Oh, that was good level. Good. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback on that.
The half hour is almost up.
Okay, yeah. We got Dawn Shy coming up shortly. We're going to talk to her really quick about her upcoming projects and her clients' projects. So she is the parapublicist to the Booth Brothers and, Mark Christopher Nelson and somebody else. So many great events. We did QueenCon last June, and we just vended there, and she had Mark and Debbie Constantino speaking, of course the Booth Brothers, and just, so many great people within the field that she represents and hosts events for. So, I mean, we just want to pick her brain, see what's coming up, and as well, current projects she's working on. I know about one. I don't know if she wants to talk about it. We'll just kind of lead her into it. Maybe she'll talk about it. Maybe she won't.
Difficult to hear clearly
every song,
should be better on MySpace.
Oh, right. So, yeah, I encourage you, if you want to hear these in the playback, and as well, I have the full version, the 2-minute, 30-second, where you can hear these voices in between ours. And Don Shai has an EVP like that as well, and we just compared it. And it's almost like the EVP come off of your voice. I don't know if they gather the strength, the energy, and the wherewithal to do that, or come off of a water drip noise, and you can hear the voices that way. But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of water drops, just one here and there, a little trickle in between, but these are quite distinct and clear, and I encourage you to listen to them. It's myspace.com/PeterJamesLives, and I'll quickly throw that into the chat room so you could just click on it and go there, and then I'll just come back in here. My cut and paste isn't working, so let me type it in here. Oh, it did take. Okay, so there's a lot of them in the chat room now. So pick one, you know, the myspace.com/PeterJamesLives. For some reason, I can't get audio to even, you know, work on. It's one of those vice versa things. MySpace takes some video, takes all the audio clips where I can't get it done on the Facebook. So certainly hear those. But, here's a voice that almost sounds like a tour guide, still giving a tour or letting us know where we are, because she says very distinctly in a female voice, now here's the prop room, and here's that EVP. You know what? It seems like they play faster on here, too, like they just really zip by. Let me try that again. Yeah, that seemed like you could hear it. I don't know if that seemed like the level was a little bit too low. Yeah, now here's the prop room. Yeah, and it almost sounded like Erica Frost's voice or something. It was just like, now here's the prop room. But, you know, it was just really quick staccato like that, you know, almost like a signature EVP would be. Just, you know, as Peter James said, and why he would get parts of names and really have to piece things together is because they don't speak with the same ease of fluidity or speech that we do. And so that explains why EVP are in the fashion that they are, or seem staccatoed, or, you know, Peter's even was speak to me, almost like a little bit more drawn out. And here's one that, this was the one that gave me the chills, and if you can go and visit this one as well, it sounds like a female's voice just shrieking, Jackie, like that. And it's, you know, it was one of those things that, again, at midnight going over these for the first time, it, you know, was really touching. That was weird. It was right there, right before my voice, and it's just, Jackie. Hoping that wasn't too distorted. That was just a slightly higher level. But yeah, again, at the MySpace, Peter James Lives, it's quite clear. Everything there is on clear audio clips that were loaded through eSnippets. And I was hoping that would transfer well through this. But at those levels, I'm going to go ahead and try to do it again with, you know, the voice that I believe to be Peter James, and very much a signature of what Peter would say. And I'll try those at Spook Manor's suggestion at this one level that I hadn't tried it at. And then again, the Jackie, hold on, Jackie wants to speak with you.
That was Sophia.
Yeah, I'm hoping that was a little bit better. But, those are just some of the ones. There were other ones that sounded like they said you're under the first level, things like that as well. I didn't load those on here, and I was just leaving the suggestion to visit MySpace, you know, Peter James Lives for those. But, again, you can hear the full cut. It's something that, you know, and a reason this is so important to me, and, again, because of what the family, you know, felt from all the rumors about Peter and throwing his voice and those kind of things that really upsets the family, because he was never a trained ventriloquist or anything of that kind. This, for me, and to capture this and, you know, to know that we could hear a pin drop at the time, I was the only male in the propeller room aboard the Queen Mary when we first did this session recording, was verification for me, for Peter, that the name Jackie was aboard the ship, that there are those aboard that still hold their name very much clear and a part of themselves, and maybe even you can deduce that they want us to know that, yeah, Jackie, she's here. We're bringing her forward to talk with you, and we're just not hearing it. And so that was something very much Peter James. He could talk to them. They were his friends. He grew up with them. His objection his whole life was, because they were friends, was to take the sting out of fear for all of us, like me, lay people that don't have a gift or ability, that grew up as a kid, you know, scared of the dark, you know, not wanting to watch certain movies. So, Steve, you come from a totally different generation. I mean, you took the tours at a time when you were 8 years old. You wanted to do it. We had our questions about it as parents, mom and dad, and we asked Peter James, is this okay? And if he felt that it was okay for you to go aboard and call out to Jackie in the pool area, which he let you do, that was okay for us. But, you know, you couldn't have got me down in the dank parts of a ship at 8 years old and certainly let alone look for ghosts. I mean, how are you okay with that?
I honestly don't know. When you guys went on your anniversary tour, I really didn't. It's odd now that I hate to say, but I didn't really care about the paranormal then, or wasn't interested and didn't know anything about it. But right after they went, and I don't know why, but I just got jealous that they went on it, and I've been in the paranormal ever since, so I really don't know why I was okay with it or how it started. I got jealous that you guys went, and honestly, to this day, I don't know why.
Well, I know. I know I couldn't have done it at 8 years old. There's no way. I don't even think at 12.
I think I was
you
seven.
Know, you know, I might have thought about, yeah, I'll go down there. I got my friends with me. I got to look cool or something. But you just had, you know, when we got back, we had Peter James' DVD with us, and I played, you know, Jackie, you know, calling out in the pool area, because he'd never seen that footage. That was always something that, you know, surely your mom and I watched on date nights, was the show Sightings, gosh, now going on 20 years ago. And, yeah, just tuning in to see Peter in that footage, and we had nothing to show you. We could only tell you about it. But when you saw it, you were, like, kind of fascinated, like, you know, wow, that little poor little girl, you know, different things that, like, probably wouldn't occur to me as a kid seeing it. Just the shock factor and the scare factor of, wow, there's somebody there that you can't see. They may touch you or something like that was always, you know, in the back of your head. But you never had that kind of thing. I mean, there's roller coasters I probably would have gone on at your age that you wouldn't go on.
I don't like roller coasters.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a little different. But this is just like, I think it might be a generational thing that you don't have the same fears and things. I don't know if it's growing up with even just a few paranormal shows versus the ones in Search of, or some of these older ones almost seem darker and mysterious, or the narrator and the music beds that just seem a little bit, I don't know.
It wasn't even the video that you showed me of Peter. It wasn't even that. I got jealous that you guys went, and I just still don't know why. It was weird, but I just don't know. Mom said that I used to stand in the laundry room staring, and the only way she could get me away from it is to pull me away. I honestly don't remember that because I was little, but did that really happen?
Like to pull you away from watching the shows?
No, like I would just stand and stare towards the garage door.
Yeah, you did little things, but, you know, it was stuff that, I mean, we dismissed off. You know, there was you told us you saw your grandpa, which was my adoptive father that lived in the house before we lived there, and different things that just, you know, as parents and me always kind of being like, well, you know, is this a child's imagination and things? This was before co-authoring Peter's book, but just wondering, you know, is this all coincidence? Is this something that, you know, we've kind of inflected or whatever, just talking about Grandpa, and you had, you know, my old room when I was a little kid. And it's just one of those things that you think as a parent, you know, okay, there's got to be a logical explanation. You're always dismissing everything as what, you know, a child says is like, okay, imagination. But then there were other things that happened along the way, and certainly stuff that proved everything to Mom when she had encounters in the home. And we had several psychics tell us the same things that only I knew about the house. And that verified for you, for me, you know, especially Mom's more of the believer in everybody. And I'm always the one that's just like, any coincidence later on in your life that, you know, I co-authored Peter's book, and then there's this and that. And then the caution became, well, I hope we didn't bring something home, and this is something that I'm responsible for, you know, from our visits to the Queen Mary and not leaving something in the parking lot, right? But that this was somebody in the interim after my father died, that there were transients coming in and out of the home, and while the county had it closed off and before we had access to the house, we had other psychics tell us that this was a person that recently passed away but used to occupy the home when they weren't supposed to.
I think he passed away when he was living there, not recently.
Well, you picked up on my dad quite a bit. Radio Rod picked up on three, one of them being my father, replaying out how he laid down and in the same position in the same room, and I couldn't believe he could even do that, like without any prior knowledge of the home, and go to the room and then go to the other part of the house where Mom's vanity was, stand right there and go, and here. And he goes, and when your dad would come into this house under county care, this person kept trying to break in, and he would jump into this closet, and he'd come back and forth jumping in and out of it because he was hiding from your dad, you know. And that was something that there's no way anybody could have known that. And there was evidence, you know, while he was under poor county care, which I'm going to start another book about. And, yeah, they were coming in and out of the house at different times, and neighbors were calling the cops and getting these people taken away, and they'd just be back the next week. So they weren't good types of people. They weren't, you know, somebody that they were self-seeking. You picked up on the person as bad, and that was something that stuck out as well. There were,
he didn't like kids.
Well, see, that's not something that this entity or, you know, activity told you. This was something you picked up on, but Brian picked up on it. Radio Rod picked up on it. Debbie Constantino picked up on that same fact. And they, you know, that's too much of a coincidence for me for them to use the word bad, just as you did. That, you know, that takes me from being the skeptic on it, on the whole situation, and looking at it subjectively and just going, wow, you know, you are right, and I got to support you as a parent on this, that you are saying exactly what you feel, and it's a very real thing for you, what you experienced and who you saw.
Well, even though I do miss the house I lived in because we moved, oh, hold on, our guest is on.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll keep talking about this through the course of the show, and I know you're having other kids on, too, as well, that you're helping. And, that was a great show you did with Carlos, and you both were talking, and I'm glad to see you have that outlet and people that you can speak with and certainly help as well. But, we have Richard Sennett coming up. You're listening to LiveParanormal.com. Certainly jump into the chat room. Thank you, everybody, for letting me know about the audio issues on the EVPs as I was playing them. So certainly help with the level checks and on the Queen Mary EVPs. But, right now, Richard Sennett, he's coming up in shortly. But right now we have parapublicist to the paranormal rock stars, and then certainly the experts, Don Shy.
Oh, my goodness. That's been quite a bit there. Hi, guys.
Hi. How you doing, Don? Thanks for coming on the show. I know you're in Vegas and taking the time. Thank you, Don.
Yeah, my reception isn't that great, but I thought, oh, I can't miss it because I promised. Hi, Sophia.
Oh, she's saying hi to you.
She's
on the chat room right there.
I wanted to say hi and thank you for coming on my show.
No problem. It's always a pleasure.
I was wondering, how is your dog doing?
Actually, my dog passed away on the 13th.
no.
Yeah, it was good though. I was kind of praying for it because she was suffering, and she, from looking at her after when we found her, she did not have any pain on her face. It looked like she just went to sleep. So I think she's doing quite well now. Actually, she's not suffering anymore. But thank you for asking, Sophia.
That is a tough loss.
And now she's with Indy and your other dog that's probably not happy she's with Indy.
Exactly. And that's what I was telling her. I said, you know what, Missy, if you just go, you're going to see Indy, your old boyfriend. That might have made her want to go ahead and go.
Probably.
So she's in a better place. Yeah. She's in a better place, and that's good. So I'm happy that she's not suffering anymore. But other than that, I'm happy about that, and I really appreciate you asking, Sophia, and thank you for remembering.
You're welcome. Oh, and River Ave guy said, I mean, Avenue, I don't know why I keep saying that, said, hi, Don.
Oh, down ho. How's he doing today? Hi to everybody in the chat room, by the way. You know, thanks for coming out and hanging out at the shows here at liveparanormal.com. And the Ghost Host is just so special, and we've just got to, you know, support. So thanks a lot, you guys, for being in the chat room.
So are you planning any upcoming events in the near future?
You know, I'm not personally, I'm always planning them, but they're difficult to put together unless you really have a lot of money to back you up for the locations. I do know that I will be attending StuCon at the Linda Vista Hospital on August 6th. That definitely, I will be there, and I may even have some, I think I have some spooked videos from the Booth Brothers, and maybe a couple of my own that I'll have there as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody at the StuCon too. Are you guys going to be there?
Yes, we will definitely be at StuCon.
Okay, well, we know that, you know, we might be alone because, you know, probably not a lot of people are going to go to that thing. I saw, maybe the last time I saw, it looked like over 255 people were kind of checking it out. So I don't know. Everybody keeps saying don't go, but it looks like people are not listening to that advice. It sounds like it's going to
be
a lot of fun.
The world's largest EVP session ever.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope somebody gets it on tape. That's why I'll be there.
And how long have you been a parapublicist? How did it all start for you?
Well, I have been the parapublicist, I don't know, probably since 2007. And it started, I've been into the paranormal for many, many years, but I started doing this because I started noticing a lot of my friends were doing things, and, you know, I wanted people to be aware of them, and I just started promoting things that my friends were doing. And then I just started it for people that I didn't know really well, just things that I thought that deserved to be promoted. And then I started, you know, getting a lot of requests to do promotion for other people and other events and other things. And before I knew it, I had quite a number of people that I was promoting, you know, their events, their appearances, their videos, their books, whatever there was. And I just really enjoyed doing that because of the fact I think there are so many people that have so much, you know, to say and to offer and things that I think other people should be aware of. So that's why I do what I do.
And everyone who's listening right now, Dawn also has her own radio show called The Green Room. And how long have you been broadcasting on Live Paranormal?
You know what? I asked Rob that once, and if I'm not mistaken, it feels like, you know, not very long at all, but if I'm not mistaken, it's probably been a year and a half or 2 years. I've been there since he kind of started the whole thing out, you know, shortly after. And I just can't believe it. And the other day I was looking back at some of the banners I had posted, and there were a number of shows that I didn't do banners for. And then I look at all the ones that I have done banners for. So there's been quite a number of shows, and it just feels like it's around, you know, a couple years that I've been doing it. It's really been, you know, a lot of fun, especially having a regular Monday night thing to do, have the regulars come in and make friendships in the chat room. And then, you know, some of the people that I've met in the chat room, I've actually met at locations, like when I was in Amarillo, Texas, for the Frontier Paracon. A number of people that I've met in the chat room were there at the event. So it's just kind of cool to have places to go to get together and meet like-minded people that are interested in the same things you are, and maybe get to share information and just strike up some friendships.
And can you tell us about some of your upcoming guests?
Events?
What?
What did you ask for? My reception's kind of bad, but did you ask about upcoming events?
No. Can you tell us about some of your upcoming guests?
Oh. Well, you know what? Sometimes that's like a surprise to me because sometimes I don't even really know who it's going to be until Sunday. I used to plan them in advance, but I think I kind of wait to see something that interests me at the last minute, and I get a feeling that, you know, once I get that feeling that I'd like to have that person on, I contact them, and then Monday they're on. My last guest was pretty exciting. It was Alexandra Holzer. That's Hans Holzer's daughter, and she's very fascinating, and we had a really, really good time on the show. I would really like people to check her out, and the video that's of her now on YouTube called My Haunted Life, it's something that I had in my mind that I thought would be perfect for her to do, and lo and behold, someone else went and filmed it, and it's done beautifully, but it really, I found it fascinating because her father was Hans Holzer, you know, pioneer. He was like the grandfather of the pioneer field, or the paranormal field. So, you know, I just kind of go with whoever is kind of exciting, and I think I'm going to have you on, and we might have to have a talk about the Queen Mary. I've had a number of shows where we've had people on talking about the Queen Mary, and I've seen you there a number of times, so we might have some things to discuss there.
Yeah, and I know you just said Alexander Holzer was on your show this past week.
Right.
You both talked about some of the pioneers in the paranormal being forgotten. What do you feel is most important about the future of the field?
Well, what I think is the most important for the future of the field is not forgetting where it came from, where it started, and the people that were the pioneers. They led the way for us to have any idea of what we're doing. I mean, we might be doing things a little bit differently and better, and people think they're doing things better. But, you know, the paranormal is the paranormal, and I don't think that the different ways or techniques or technology you use to capture it is going to make it anything different. The paranormal is paranormal. And I think some of the most amazing evidence was captured in the primitive ways, you know, in the past, and we didn't have all the high-tech equipment, and a lot of it is dealt with personal experiences. So, you know, just the people that have written the books, that have forged their way, they've done the legwork, and now we're picking up from where they left off. We don't know everything. They did not know everything, but it's really a good idea to get that history, read what they did, and possibly formulate our own ideas or new techniques, and, you know, maybe take it a step farther. But I think no matter what we do with the field or the technology or the equipment or our techniques, the paranormal is always going to be the same thing. It's paranormal, and it's like hunting history. If there were no history, there would be nothing for us to be out there looking for. And the paranormal isn't only ghosts. It also deals with, like, the Bigfoot sightings and the UFOs and all the cryptids and, you know, some of the different legends. So it's not just ghosts, but when we're hunting ghosts, we're hunting history. So I think the future of the field is to preserve the history of the field, and I think preserving the history for any field is important. So that's where I think the future of it would best be kept, is if we really honor and remember those that came before us.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in real quick, Dawn. You're listening to Dawn Scheid, parapublicist, and I just wanted to jump in because I'm seeing a lot more people joining the chat room, and for those of you that are just tuning in and who aren't in the chat room even by now, feel free to jump into the chat room, call in live, 619-639-4606. I'll post the number again, but yeah, we're on live with parapublicist Dawn Scheid.
Thank you. Well, you know what, the other thing, speaking of John popping in there, when we were talking about history and the pioneers and the people that forged their way through this field, yeah, Peter James, I know we've had this conversation, but Peter James forged quite a bit in this field. I mean, you know, dealing with all the things that he dealt with and kind of leading the way for other people to get that fascination and want to pursue things the way he did and further it even more. So, you know, that's pioneering the paranormal field, and we need to preserve all that and keep those memories alive of those people so people don't take this and think it's something brand new that they've just discovered or they've just started. It's been going on for a long time, since, the 1800s, if not before then. But we have a lot of people that we owe it to, you know, to keep them in our minds because of the fact most of us couldn't talk about this out in the open had other people not forged the way and you know, opened up the doors for us to be able to do this, you know, so openly. We've really, really got to appreciate these people and honor them and not forget them for sure.
Right, and also, too, keeping with that theme, we have Richard Sennett, who's worked with Peter James. He's coming on shortly, and historian, certainly, I mean, a pioneer within the field. And you're the one that actually coined that term, pioneers in the paranormal. That was your Ventura event. I mean, you need to get credit
for
that as well.
Richard was there. Yeah, Richard was there. In fact, it was going to be an event just honoring him and his books. And I knew he was going to be on. He worked with Peter James. He also worked with Hans Holzer. I mean, he's been around for a long, long time, and people really need to realize. I mean, I think he's been doing this since 1976, you know, 78, something like that. He'll verify that. I do remember, but he's been doing this for a very, very long time, and he does quite a lot of experimental things. But he, I consider, also one of the pioneers in the field. So there is a small handful that I would consider pioneers in the field. The others are all people picking up where they left off. But Richard is a fascinating man. I can't do enough to keep his, you know, name alive, like much like we like to do for Peter James, because he has so many wonderful stories. He's got some great books, and he's just an all-around great guy. I just love him to death. So I was really glad to see that you guys were having him on today.
And are there any... Are you currently in production on any televised or documentary projects?
Well, I am working with promoting the newest film for the Booth Brothers, which is, of course, Soul Catcher, Trail of Fears. The release date for that is actually July 20th, and I got them on the... I got them on Coast to Coast again, and they will be on the show Coast to Coast on the release date for the film. So that worked out so perfectly. And I am also working on a couple of DVDs of my own, and I'm pursuing putting my Queen Mary DVD out there. And I talked to a couple people about this, and I'm putting it together because we got some fascinating stuff, and I think people that may not be able to get out to the Queen Mary would like to see what it's all about. So I think I'm going to go ahead and finish that up. Other than that, I'm always filming and trying to collect things and pull evidence because I would like to add some of it to my presentations that I do when I go to events.
How long have you been a parapublicist for documentary filmmakers, the Booth Brothers?
Oh, geez, that would probably have to be about a year and a half.
Yeah,
maybe about a year and a half or so. Yeah, I've always appreciated their work so much. I've always aspired to do, you know, films pretty much in the vein that they do theirs. Of course, they're masters. And I was just so honored to finally meet them and now working with them and doing publicity for them. I'm very excited about that because their work is just unbelievable to me, and the way they put it together with such compassion and care. And I mean, a lot of it'll scare the bejesus out of you, but the way they put it together, it's just amazing work, and the stories are so fascinating. And that's why I felt, you know, it's just not a bunch of guys walking around in the dark in the IR, you know, and let's see what they find. They really have stories behind them, and then they also teach lessons. Like when they go to places that terrible things have happened, they kind of, you know, teach you a lesson that this should have never happened, and let's see that it never happens again type of thing. So I find their films absolutely fascinating.
Everyone, I just want to say again, make sure to check out Dawn Shy's show on liveparanormal.com called The Green Room, and check out the Booth Brothers' new DVD, Soul Catcher.
Wow, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I just want to tell everyone, Soul Catcher is about Native Americans.
Yes. And they captured some amazing evidence that's on that film, but also they honor the story and the things that the Native Americans went through, and they were honored by the Native Americans. A lot of people tried to get into certain areas, and they just said no, they wouldn't allow them. But because of the compassion and the love that the Booth brothers brought and their honesty, they felt, you know, that the Booth brothers should be the ones that would be able to bring these stories out. They just didn't want just anybody in there, so they've allowed the Booth brothers. So it's really, really a fascinating journey, and it does deal with the Native Americans, and it's got some amazing, amazing stuff on this film. So make sure you check it out. If you order it now, and you can go to soulcatchermovie.com, and they will even send you, it'll be free shipping and a free gift. I think it's autographed. But anyway, that is up to July 20th to the release date. That's a special that's running till then. And you can check out any of their other films at spooktv.com. Collect them all. They're all absolutely amazing.
And I know we're running out of time here. Do you have any websites you want to say?
Okay, well, yeah, my website is kind of, I need to get in there and update it, but if you just type in donshy.com, D-O-N-N-S-H-Y, that'll get you to one of my websites. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter as well. Just look up Donshy, D-O-N-N-S-H-Y, and check me out. And, you know, if I got anything coming up, I'll post it out there. So if you're looking for something or you want to hear about something or get a website, you know, let me know, and I'll try to get the information out there. And I really, really, Sophia, I want to thank you so much for having me on your show. And I want you to make sure you give Richard Sennett a great big hello from me, okay, because I think he's just a doll.
If you have more time, we have some more questions to ask you.
Well, we can have back on. Yeah. Do you have more? Richard's about to come on. I was just seeing if you wanted to say hi to him real quick or anything.
Okay, yeah, because my reception, if I turn the phone, then all of you guys, I don't hear anything. So I'm going to go ahead and go. But please tell Richard I said hi and just tell him I'm in Las Vegas and my phone is kind of in and out. But I want to thank you guys for having me on, and I will talk to you soon.
Well, thanks for coming on, Don, and everything. I'm going to let Sophia say bye to you real quick, too, as well. But, yeah, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely, you know, have you on in the future for a longer broadcast and ask you some more questions and see what you have upcoming.
Okay.
And, yeah, I know Sophia wanted to thank you as well.
Okay, that would be great, especially if I'm in better area for reception on my phone.
Thank you, Don, for coming on. Can't wait to see you again and everyone. Again, make sure to check out The Green Room on liveparanormal.com. And this is Dawn Shy.
Thank you so much. Big hugs to you, Sophia. And cheers to everyone in the chat room. Thank you so much. And hi to Richard Sennett, and we'll see you guys soon.
Okay, bye.
Live Paranormal Radio is the place to be, so join us at liveparanormal.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is Live Paranormal Radio, brought to you by LiveParanormal.com, the number one interactive online community for everything paranormal, horror, and sci-fi. LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit liveparanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.
This is Bill Murphy of Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Tipperelli on liveparanormal.com.
Yeah, hi, everyone. We're This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed citing psychic and paranormal researcher Peter James. Yeah, thanks, Dawn Shy, for coming on just now and keeping us updated on her current promotions and events. And we do. We have to have you on back at a later time, too, as well, Dawn. And thank you for coming on. Right now, with the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, we have a legend within the field. And as Dawn Shy is, again, coined for so many pioneers in the paranormal, and that suits this next guest very well. And we're on live with author, historian, lecturer, and famed televised paranormal investigator Richard Sennett once again as a follow-up. Hi, Richard. How are you doing today?
I'm doing real well. Glad to be on.
Wow. Thanks again for coming on, Richard. I mean, there were so many people that we had certainly had more questions. We hadn't even touched on Hollywood ghosts yet. And still had some Central California things to finish off there. And we have the big TAPS Paranormal Boot Camp with Sid Schultz next Saturday at La Prisma Mission. And certainly, you know, we love catching up on the history and knowing some names and animals even and things that to look for or certainly ask about while visiting the mission. And you're always the go-to person.
Well, glad to be of help.
No, thanks, Richard. Thanks for coming on again.
Thank you again for coming on my show.
Oh, good. Well, I'm sure you've got a whole bunch of questions for me. You always do.
Yeah. Didn't you meet Debbie while testing her psychic abilities?
My wife, Debbie, is a gifted psychic. In fact, I put her up against any of these other psychics, even the ones you see on TV. And if she ever wanted to make a real name for herself, she could, but she just doesn't. That's what's so amazing. She's not gripped by the need to show off or to become famous. She just does it, and it's no big deal for her. But I've seen her do things that just make your hair stand on end. And we've had a great relationship. We've known each other 30 years now, and we've had some adventures all over the world, some of them quite astounding. I should write a book about just the crazy stuff we've ended up doing and the oddball places we've investigated.
Do you still give walking tours of Ventura County Courthouse here in California?
Oh, yes, I do that all the time. In fact, tonight I've got a very special ghost bus tour, which we take people to haunted sites in Ventura and examine them. I've got a really cool 1900 house, a big two-story farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere that has a ghost that strangles people, just chokes them. But we're going to go investigate that tonight. That's going to be great fun. I have another big tour at the end of the month. I operate. They're all listed on my website or on my Facebook page. I'm all over the place. And I still do them. I still enjoy them. And I'm always amazed by regular folks, not, you know, investigators or trained people, just regular people who go on these tours and have remarkable experiences, feel things, see things, smell things that, of course, they shouldn't be able to do because they're psychic things. So I have a great deal of fun with it, and I enjoy giving the tours. I'll give them as long as I can.
And can you tell us about your new live paranormal show?
Well, this new life, we went up to La Purisima's Paranormal Challenge. Oh, you're talking about the radio show coming up? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the TV show Paranormal Challenge. I just did an episode of that, remarkably, up at La Purisima. That's going to air about the middle of August. But the new radio show, we're just setting it up right now, and I hope to have it all ready to go by tomorrow night on the 17th. And it's going to be about my ghost hunting, my careers in the field. And hopefully after that, I plan to get some good guests to come on the show and really spice it up. It's a lot of fun, and I encourage people to two-hand and call in with their questions. I really enjoy being able to answer people's questions and give them some insight. Remember, I've been doing this for 33 years. I've met all the greats in the business. I've gone to most of the important haunted sites. But I'm still willing to learn, and I'm still willing to teach others what I've learned over the years. And in this field, I think that any kind of mentoring is a very positive step.
And what's the name of your show?
I believe it's called Ghost World.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's going to be all about ghosts, so don't worry about that. And we'll talk about other related subjects. We have many sister sciences besides the study of ghosts. I mean, there's the ufologist, which, oddly enough, the people who study UFOs have very much in common with ghosts. For instance, in haunted houses, we get high E-meter readings, electromagnetic readings. Sites where UFOs are said to have landed, we get high EMF readings. So there are many similarities. UFOs disappear like ghosts. So is there a stronger link? I don't know. And then, of course, there are cryptozoology friends who are out looking for mysterious animals. And they still haven't found Bigfoot, but they found some other animals, not so dramatic, but they have made some discoveries. So there are all these related fields we're going to be talking about as well.
Yeah, everyone, make sure to listen in on, listen to Richard Sennett's show. It's going to be really great.
Oh, thank you for that plug.
You're welcome. And can you tell us about your walking tours at Ojai?
Yeah, Ojai is another interesting. See, right above Ventura is this little valley called Ojai, which means moon in the Native American language. And it was a sacred valley even for the Native Americans. Well, now a lot of movie stars, a lot of artists, philosophers have moved in there. And a lot of very famous people are linked to it, like Aldous Huxley, the writer who did Strange New World, and Jeannie Bassett, I think, who started Theosophy. Krishnamurti, philosopher, lived up there. A lot of people, famous people, live there, but it is also very haunted. In fact, well, some of the people I interviewed up there say that they should rename it the Valley of the Lost Souls. And we're going to be taking a little tour up there and pointing out some of the haunted sites and some of the strange places linked to the history of the Ojai Valley. And there's some really weird stuff. I'll just give you one story. Back in the old hippie days, back in the late 60s and 70s, that was a haven for the flower children. They just mobbed the place, much to the chagrin of the local people who lived there. But there were a lot of illegal drugs being flown, gotten in there. And one particular barranca, a little gully with trees, a very picturesque spot, little creek running through it. A lot of hippies went there. Wouldn't you know it, these girls went down there, they were trying drugs. And this one girl tried a new drug she'd never tried before, and bam, it killed her. She had an allergic reaction to it. She dropped dead. Her friends took off and didn't tell anybody. They later discovered her body down there. Well, that's, you know, a tragedy happened at that time. But her ghost is still there. And if you go on certain nights, you can sometimes hear her moaning. And I've taken people down into that barranca, and that's going to be featured on the walking tour.
What activity have you experienced at La Prisma?
Oh, La Prisma. I call that my Disneyland for ghost hunters. Now, if you're in Nevada, Virginia City is has that designation. There's so many haunted buildings in that old town. But out here in California, we don't have quite the same concentration. But we do have one great spot, and that is La Purísima Concepción. It was designed as a Spanish mission about 1808, and it was originally destroyed in the earthquake of 1812, relocated to the present site in 1815, and was quite prosperous. But again, at one point in 1824, the native people rose up in rebellion against the Spanish people who ruled California. Now, interestingly enough, their beef wasn't really against the Catholic Church. Their beef was against the higher taxes. So it was, they just didn't like the fact that their taxes were burdened on them, were doubled, and so they rose in rebellion. And there was a huge battle fought there, which a number of Native Americans and Spanish were killed. And I believe that battle is what caused the scar. There are psychic scars on that place. And if you walk through the place, especially if you get the opportunity at night, seeing a ghost is almost normal. It's sort of something you can expect. And so I've gone there, and I've had a number of experiences. I've taken maybe 7 to 10 groups up there over the years, and we've conducted a number of psychic experiments, and every one of them came up positive. So places that I've had personal experiences, the main church, I once saw a Native American, actually two Native Americans seated on the floor, kneeling down, and they just vanished. I also saw a woman seized by an invisible something or other and thrown against a wall. I didn't know what it was, but by the way, I never saw that woman again. She ran out, and I've never contacted her since. She just doesn't want anything to do with ghosts. Well, I was in there doing a little seance. We were holding hands in the chapel right next to the confessional. And it's an old-style confessional with a cloth, like a blanket, over the front of it. And the medium said, what do you want? And I said, well, ask the ghost to give us a sign that they're really here. And they said, can you give us a sign? And I said, yes. And then nothing happened. I said, okay, give us a sign right now. And they said, yes. And I caught movement out of my eye. We all looked, and we saw the blanket where the confessional was, and we saw the imprint of a hand pushing out from inside of it. You could see the five fingers, and then the hand slid down the blanket. Well, we broke the circle, and we went immediately over there and pulled back the curtain. There was nobody inside of it. There was nobody else in the entire chapel. So whatever it was quite bizarre. And I've also saw a phantom dog in the Padres' quarters. Now, that Padres' quarters has always been a hot spot. A number of people, including the rangers who keep watch over the place, have in fact seen a ghostly monk there. And I have gone in there, had my equipment drained. I've had my batteries drained on my flashlights. I felt an icy cold touch, all kinds of neat stuff. But the big thing La Purísima is known for is EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. Many people have tape recorded and recorded sounds that shouldn't be there. Flute music, chanting monks, Indian cries, voices, all sorts of stuff right there. And one guy went up there with a tape recorder and actually got gunshots, which he believes were echoes from that 1824 battle. Now, we actually went up there at one point, and if you look at some of the pillars in front of the main colonnade, you can actually see bullet holes from that battle. And I even brought in a forensic specialist, a police officer who is specializes in bullet holes. He confirmed that these were large caliber musket holes. So it was quite amazing. We had a great deal of fun up there, and I came away with all sorts of knowledge and background indicating that that is, in fact, a really haunted place. If anybody's interested in ghost hunting, go up there. Go up there and check it out. I only regret that I won't be able to join Sid. He asked me to join him on that investigation, but unfortunately, I have to give a book signing in Virginia City that very same day, so I'll be out of state. But if you guys ever go back, you may want to consider calling me up because it's one of my favorite spots.
Yeah, everyone, Sid Schultz's event is August 23rd, so next week. We will be there up at La Prisma. And my dad has to plug the show really quick.
No, but hey, Richard, we'd love to meet you up at Virginia City anytime. We love that town. We just went in March, and we love it. that was just like the St. Mary's Paracon. That was like a great event, and we'd never been there before. But I want to remind people, there's so many more people in the chat room now, new people joining in. I just want to remind everybody, we're on live with author, lecturer, historian, paranormal investigator, famed paranormal investigator, and televised investigator. And that's interesting to learn that you're going to be on a paranormal challenge coming up in on Travel Channel this August. And sorry, the phone's feeding back in my ear, and just kind of, here, I'll hold it away from my ear just a little bit and talk into it. But we're talking with Richard Sennett, and thank you again for being on, Richard. You're on liveparanormal.com, and you have a show coming up, and we'll totally do everything we can to plug that as well. But everybody, jump into the chat room if you're not already. Feel free to throw questions in there or call in live, 619-639-4606.
Oh, sorry. I was just putting the number in the chat room. I had a question. Have you ever tried taking maybe a milk bone or a ball to go see if the dog maybe would respond to that?
No, I never have. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. I walked into that room. I was by myself, and I saw something curled up on the floor. It was gray. And as I looked at it, it lifted its head up, and it looked at me, and then it disappeared. And I could see from the shape of the head, and its very lean, almost skeletal body, that it was a greyhound. And I later found out that the Padres used to go hunting, and they used greyhounds in their hunting to chase down rabbits and other animals. So there was historical confirmation that there had been dogs there, but I didn't take a ball. Maybe I should have. Maybe that would be something you might want to bring to see if that would stimulate the dog's return.
Yeah, maybe a milk bone would work too. If he smells it, maybe the smell would just interest him into maybe nudging the milk bone, or maybe you would get bite marks on it from the ghost dog.
Oh, that would be great. Now, I am told the old legends claim that ghosts can't really eat, but they can smell and enjoy the smells of food. So maybe your milk bone idea isn't so far-fetched. So, hey, might be worth a shot.
Yeah, I've also heard, like, on a haunting shows, ghosts have maybe bitten people sometimes, and so I thought maybe a ghost dog could also try that too, and maybe have like a small puncture hole in the milk bone.
Well, I have heard that the ghosts can't attack or hurt people, but remarkably, I've never had any experiences like that myself. Now, I have gone out with other team members, and they have experienced things such as scratches and things, but I kind of would welcome it. I'd love to have a ghost bite me, but so far none have. Maybe I don't taste good or who knows what, but I've never had that experience, but I have heard that others have, and I've actually seen the results of several people who claim to have been scratched. So You never know. There's a lot out there we're still trying to discover the answers to.
Yeah, since we have three dogs, I thought maybe a dog that long ago, they probably had something that would, maybe the dog would go fetch, I mean the dog would go fetch like maybe a stick. They could go through a stick and the dog would get it. So maybe a stick would work too, but since we have them, we know they like playing with balls, and I think a ball would work, or a milk bone, or something that dogs like nowadays.
Well, dogs have always liked little balls of fetching things, so maybe this would be something that works. And that's what I like. I think ghost hunters need to think outside of the box to set up experiments that would help to confirm the presence of ghosts. But, you know, don't stick with the same things. Try something new, like your dog idea. Heck, if you could stimulate a reaction, like, as you say, some teeth marks on a bone, that would be, I think, very important and significant to confirm that the ghost dog does haunt that building.
Hold on, my dad's going to talk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's taking a quick little girl's break, Richard.
That happens. Animals are at La Purisima. We're talking about the ghost dog I saw, but lots of people have heard, well, I've actually heard it myself. I've heard a horse. You know, I was there late at night, and I heard this, like, thundering hooves, like a horse riding down at me. And when I looked, there was nobody there. No horse,
wow.
No rider, no nothing.
Wow. No, that's it's all stuff that I know there's people in the chat room, and I'm recognizing them right now, and they're popping in too. And again, call in 619-639-4606 or jump into the chat room. But these are people that I know for a fact are attending next weekend, next Saturday's paranormal boot camp at La Purisima. So, I mean, these are all things that I know we're chomping at the bit to know about, ask. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I mean, that's a healthy angle is what you said. Try something new. I know that was something Peter James believed in as well. And it was something that, you know, resonates with me because he felt that if you still use typewriters or chiseled on stones, imagine what Barnes & Noble looked like on the shelves if everything was a stone tablet chiseled on there, you know, and trying to refresh that and carry it home. Everything progresses and moves forward, and he always felt ghost research did too. How many books have you written over the years?
I have a division. Books that I've written and books that I've had published. Now, the present count on written books is like 62. Published books is now 18, almost 19 books. My newest one I'll be signing up in Virginia City is called Silver Ghosts. That's about the ghosts of northern Nevada. I wrote that with a psychic investigator, Sandy Lene, who lives in Carson City, a friend of mine. And so I've written that. That's my most recent. I'm writing a book right now called Phantomology, The Art and Science of Ghost Hunting, kind of trying to put my 33 years of experience into a book. And I'm also working on a novel at the same time about the Civil War. So I continue to write. I'm a writing fool. And hopefully, maybe I can actually sell a few things.
Right. No, I had a math teacher that I was always really bad at math. And I'm saddened that I learned later on in life in college that, you know, I struggled with it so much. And he goes, I said, you never use this stuff. I can't do it. And he just goes, well, think of it as a workout for the mind. And that's the way I view writing. Is like if anybody told me that earlier in life, maybe it would have really stuck and it would have been something for me. But it keeps your mind active, young. For me, it's playing the drums and writing, and it's just something that, you know, just keeps you going. It's something that I feel that if someday I stop doing it, I'd stop. So it's just one of those things. I see in the chat room, too, we have Bobby Garcia of Ghost Studies Los Angeles, and I know that he just recently wrote on ghostvillage.com, and it's posted this week as well for his new ongoing series, Living Voices. Can you tell us about the focus of the column? Because I know it really deals with the focus and the direction of the field today.
Yeah, I was comparing the way it was in the old days when I first started which was more sociable. I mean, all the ghost hunters knew each other, helped each other out as much as possible. And we didn't have a lot of electronic equipment. I mean, I remember seeing my first computer, which was about the size of a large laundry basket, a huge laundry cart with wheels on it. Actually, had four little wheels. It was that big. And then how it is today, and I think that some of it, as I mentioned, people aren't thinking outside the box anymore. They're a little too problematic. I also think that the TV shows have been both a blessing and a curse. Blessing in the
right.
fact that now it's more accepted. I mean, people talk about ghosts, or more people believe in them are out there, but also a curse because they try to duplicate what they see on the screen, and they fail to make a division between the fact that people who are making a TV show are making a TV show. They are celebrities. They're doing entertainment, whereas, you know, real ghost hunting can be as dull as possible. It's like, you know, hours of dead time where nothing happens, and then, you know, 5 minutes of sheer terror. And that's pretty
yeah.
much how it is. And La Purissima, I think I've gone up there numerous times, spent, you know, hours, days up there. And, of course, you can't do that on a TV show. You'd lose all of your watchers. So they have to, by necessity, cut it down and make it very dramatic and pick the
right.
most dramatic parts. But if you use that TV show as a template, it'll give you a false idea of what ghost hunting is about. Yeah, it's about collecting data, not ratings. And it's a touchy feeling in that regard. There's a few things I don't think. I'm against ghost baiting, even though my friend Zach does it and all that. It makes good television, I know. But I don't know. If I were a ghost and he started yelling insults at me, the last thing I'd do is actually do anything. I'd say, okay, well, you don't like me, I'm out of here. So I'm not for ghost baiting. I do believe in ghost re-stimulation. And I've even, when we worked together on Ghost Adventures with Zach and the guys, I even suggested, well, try this and try that. And they actually did some of my recommendations and got results. At La Purissima, I asked them to bring some flute music, because the flute was a sacred instrument to the Chumash people. If anybody could play a flute, ideally that would be what to bring, or even a recorder of some kind, you know, an old-time instrument, and play it there. That could stimulate things. I've also found doing activities from the past, be it playing a historical game or dressing in costumes or playing, as I say, music, or doing any activity, such as a friend of mine went to La Purissima, and there is a book which had the Lord's Prayer done in the Chumash language, which is now pretty well dead. He went into the church and phonetically read it out in Chumash, and while his friend made a videotape of it. When they looked back, there were orbs flying around his head, all kinds of bizarre stuff going on. So anything that will re-stimulate, and I'm all for that. I'm just against the argumentative sort of insulting approach.
Right. You know, that you're giving me chills that you even brought that up, because that's leading right into Sophia's next question. She's back in the room, by the way, and we're on liveparanormal.com with famed paranormal historian and investigator and author Richard Sennett. And feel free to call in 619-639-4606 and join the chat room on liveparanormal.com. But Bobby, and we were just talking about Bobby that wrote the article about you for his first installment on ghostvillage.com for the Living Voices article. Bobby and I in GSLA, we actually didn't investigate Engagement of Cal State Long Beach, in which he picked up audibly and as well as EVP flute music out in the field, where it's reported that actually back in 1992, where they unearthed the remains of a Tongven boy, and as well a sacred burial circle. There was a mini mall scheduled to build there and start foundation work, and it still remains an abandoned field, and people see shadow figures there today. And it's just part of common reports by faculty, staff, and students. And so investigating and knowing that about Cal State Long Beach, tell us about your investigations of the campus in the early 70s.
Oh, well, my first investigations was at the ladies' dormitory, Cerritos Hall, where we had heard that a girl had killed herself and her ghost was seen in her old room in the bathroom on the hallway. And so, of course, my friends and I managed to sneak in with our girlfriends opening the door for us. And we went and did a little investigation right there. Unfortunately for us, we were college guys, and being in the ladies' dormitory was not permitted. And, of course, all these ladies did add a lot to the distraction element. So, but we did. That place is very haunted. Okay, what I would recommend, if you go back to that field, get yourself a chiringa. A chiringa is also called a bull roarer. It's like a flat stick on a string. And if you spin it around in the air, it makes a kind of a whirling sound like a helicopter. Now, that was used by the Native Americans for rituals and to call people for a ritual. So do that, and I bet you might be able to improve your chances of getting paranormal reactions.
And can you tell us the story of the nighttime monk at Mission of San Antonio de Padua that you saw?
Padua. San Antonio de Padua. Yeah, that was a famous case. I mean, that's what started me out. I mean, I was doing archaeology. In fact, I'm still very interested in archaeology in the past, and I do write historical things as well. So it's a love that I've never really left. But late one night back in 1978, I walked through the garden about 12:30, and I saw a monk. And I saw he looked very real. And there are still monks at the mission, at least they were at that time. And I walked over to talk to what I thought was one of the brothers. Well, I got about 10 feet away, and he disappeared. He just didn't vanish slowly. He just, bam, was gone. And that's pretty much what started my whole ghost hunting career. I was curious to find out what in the world I had seen. And I later talked to some others who had seen similar things at the old mission. So I felt that I had a great quandary, and I've been trying to answer the question, where did the ghost go, since that time on. And I still don't have all the answers, but I've gone to hundreds of haunted sites all over the world. But it started with that monk back at that old mission courtyard in 1978.
And did you see any ghosts as a child?
Yes, I have. I did have a few weird things happen, but, you know, I discounted them. When I reached a certain age, I thought, you know, all of that was just, overactive imagination. I just poo-pooed it all. I said, I was a little kid. I was just seeing things, you know. And later on, I started to realize that maybe I did see things. Maybe I've got some sort of latent psychic gift. It's very latent. I'm certainly no psychic. But I think all of us have these abilities. And I've even talked to complete skeptics who don't believe in ghosts or ghost hunting or anything, who've had psychic experiences. And I asked them, you know, but you saw a ghost. Well, how can you deny it? And they said, oh, well, I was just a bad, it was a reflection, you know. It's just, they do whatever they can to try to rationalize what they saw as something logical. So I've had experiences, but I really didn't give them much credibility till after I saw that monk. I wasn't expecting it. All of a sudden, here was something I couldn't deny. I had seen something, but I'm still trying to figure out what it might be.
And do you remember what you saw as a child?
Well, I remember I was getting ready for school, and I went to a mirror, and I was, combing my hair, getting everything ready to go. I guess I was about, 13 at the time, 12 maybe. And I looked in the mirror, and there was a woman standing behind me, a woman I had never seen before in my life. She was wearing, like, a white nightgown, and I turned to look over my shoulder to see who it was, and there was nobody there. I never saw anything like that. I also saw there was supposedly a ghost tree where a man had hung himself in the little town where I lived. And once, I remember it was a very clear moonlit night, very warm summer night, I saw a figure of a man standing next to the tree. He was all sort of bluish, and it just vanished. But again, I thought, I'm just a man. I heard the stories, and I'm just, my mind is running away with me. You know, I blinked my eyes, and it was gone. So it's probably just overactive imagination. Now I'm thinking maybe it wasn't. Maybe I have had this experience that kind of should have given me a little clue that maybe I do have some gifts.
And can you tell us in your book, Hollywood Ghosts, where do you think is the most active location around Los Angeles?
The most active location? Well, all of the Hollywood studios, everyone, bar none, even ones which are no longer used as Hollywood studios, are haunted, everyone. And I think it has a lot to do with the lifestyle of being a movie star, even in the silent days. It was a pretty rowdy place, lots of cocaine use and suicides, all sorts of things happened. So I think that every studio is haunted. If you want to look at one spot where I've collected the most information, it would be the Hollywood Forever Cemetery over on Santa Monica Boulevard. And I've had things happen. A lot of it is linked to the silent star Rudolph Valentino. And he's haunts near his old grave. There's also other ghostly events that have been reported at that particular site. So Hollywood Memorial Cemetery would be one I would select. Also, there's a park called Runyon Park. It's over near Fuller. And it used to be all overgrown with weeds, and remarkably, that's where the Manson family used to gather before they would go out on their murderous expeditions. And people have had weird stuff happen at Runyon Park. You can just go there now, but satanic cults used to meet there. I was there with a group one night, and we did hear a weird voice say, "Get out." Wasn't very original in its language, but it had a weird quality to it. Scared the whole group. We all left after that. Now, whether it was some homeless guy hiding in the woods, I don't know, but it's another haunted site. Now, also theaters. Lots of the theaters are haunted, including the Pantages, that old movie palace, now a legitimate theater. Many of the movie houses there have different ghosts linked to them. All kinds of different accounts are told throughout the Hollywood area. Now, if you're looking for a place which really has some ghosts to it, try Grauman's Chinese Theater. You know, they call it Man's Chinese now, but it'll always be Grauman's Chinese to me, where they have the handprints in the courtyard. A lot of the inside of the building is haunted. They have a room where they have the old handprints. You see, if a star is popular, they get their hands put into the cement. But if they lose their popularity, they pry it up and put somebody else in. But they don't throw them away. They keep them in a big room, you know, in case that star should get popular again or something, they could use it. And people have heard things in that room. And the most active ghost is believed to be a woman who haunts the ladies' bathroom at the Chinese Theater. One story I heard is that she killed herself. She was in there for some reason, or her boyfriend left her or something, and so she went in there and took her own life. And that's why she haunts, kind of like a Moaning Myrtle in the Harry Potter movies.
And
those are some of the places. Yeah.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
No, those are just a few of the haunted spots I've investigated. A lot of them are private homes. I certainly, part of my ethics are that I don't, you know, mention private residences, least, you know, a bunch of ghost hunters knock on the door and want to see, you know, the ghost of this movie star or that movie star. So I've investigated them, but as a rule, I don't give out their addresses or names so that people could have their privacy.
And I know you were talking about Rudolph Valentino earlier. Tell us about your investigation of Valentino's dog, Kabar's ghost, at a pet cemetery in Calabasas.
Oh, yeah, one of the coolest places anyone should go. And I believe any tourist should go to it. And I believe every ghost hunter ought to as well. It's a pet cemetery in Calabasas. And it's remarkably set up because that's where the movie stars, their pets, are buried. And they actually have show you a map of where you can go to look for the various pets, ghosts of the pets that are out there. Now, what's amazing is I tend to believe that a lot of the ghosts aren't just spirits of the person, but are actually implanted memories from those grieving who visit the area where a person has died. So I think that that might be the reason why K-Bar's grave is so well known as a haunted site. Now, right after Valentino died, his Great Dane died. K-Bar was his name. And in fact, interestingly enough, we have an account that the very night that Valentino died in New York City, his dog let out this horrible howl. And it was so remarkable that this other actress was riding on the road next to the house, heard it, and actually drove off the road and had an accident over this howl. And many who investigated the ghost of Valentino have actually gotten his dog as well, which gives us an interesting clue that maybe we can take our pets with us. And people have gone to the cemetery in Calabasas, found the grave, and have actually done like little seances there because people have seen the ghost dog. I was with a group, a crazy group, I'll have to give points for that. We were out there holding hands around this tombstone for Valentino's dog. And this one lady starts to, I don't know, she started to make funny noises. And she said that he's licking me. He's licking my ankles. And I don't know if anybody was really licking anybody's ankles. I looked over there. I didn't see any dogs or anything. But I will admit, I did get this icy cold when that happened. And when she started doing her little moaning, a chill went down my spine. Now, whether or not I set myself up for it, or whether or not the ghost dog is really there, or all these people wanting the ghost dog there have maybe attracted him to that particular site. People have seen the ghost dog on the road by Valentino's old house, Falcon's Lair, which, by the way, sadly was torn down recently. And, but the ghost dog may haunt that particular area.
And who haunts Musso and Frank's restaurant?
Oh, Valentino is the ghost there, too. And I've talked to numerous people who've claimed to see him. But Musso and Frank's is like a Hollywood institution. And, Mary Pickford went there. Tom Mix used to ride his horse through the door. All kinds of famous movie stars go there in the past and still do. And by the way, they still serve a really mean pork chop. They haven't changed that from the menu. In fact, it's kind of amazing. Their menu is hugely thick. They never take anything off the menu. They just keep adding things to it. And most people agree that it's now kind of a tourist trap, but they still make a really mean margarita. So if you ever look interested in a margarita or a martini, that's the place to go. But no, he's been seen by the ladies' bathroom. Now, I did a lot of study on that, trying to find out if Valentino ever in life went to Musso and Frank's. And I went through all the – I couldn't find a dang thing. Finally, I talked to Hollywood legend Mark Wanamaker, who has written the definitive history. And I called him up and said, I can't find anything. Did Valentino ever go there? And he doesn't believe in ghosts, but he said he couldn't confirm it, but he said he was 90% certain that the old metro lot used to be over there. The Paramount lot, I'm sorry, used to be closer. It isn't where it is today. That was the metro lot. But the Paramount lot was closer into downtown Hollywood. And everyone who went to the metro to Paramount, they had a really lousy commissary, which meant they had like navy beans on the menu all the time and stuff. And anybody who was a star never ate at the commissary, but went out to eat. And the closest restaurant of any note was Musso and Frank's. So Valentino made several pictures for Paramount, and so it's a good possibility that he did, in fact, go over to Musso and Frank's. So that was confirmed.
And did you say a movie star rode their horse into the restaurant?
Oh, yeah, that used to be there. Horses were real common a long time ago. Even Valentino has used to ride his horse downtown and tie it up in front of these places. You can imagine, Hollywood was nothing like it is today. In fact, he has been seeing Valentino riding his horse. He's been seen on the beach over near his home, the old Leo Carrillo Beach. He's been seen at the Paramount back lot, where at one time he actually did keep a horse when it was a metro lot. And he's kind of interesting. This one guard saw him, and what's amazing is he saw Valentino riding on a white horse, which is what he had, in a white shirt, but he had a rose in his teeth. They had a rose that he's biting down on as he zips through at a gallop lot. But what's interesting is the guard didn't know that the rose was one of Valentino's symbols that he used in his lovemaking and seduction of women. He was really one for, you know, giving them roses and doing all sorts of things to seduce them. And he had quite a stable of ladies over the years who had relationships with Rudolph Valentino. And by the way, at the time he was married, so must have been pretty amazing. Not that his wife wasn't beyond having a few affairs, too. So interesting stuff out there. And Valentino is the ghost of Hollywood. You know, he died when he was 30 years old in 1926, but they still continue to see his ghost throughout the film Capital.
No, Richard, yeah, this is John Tempoli, and I've temporarily, but the hours just flew by. I mean, we're talking at this point about your one book, Hollywood Ghosts, The Fabulous Phantoms of Filmdom, and again, we're on with Richard Sennett, famed author, historian, paranormal investigator, and we have like 7 minutes left, and if we can, Sophia, if it's okay, she asks you one more question, but I see that,
sure.
Yeah, we're right now at the 7 minute mark and counting down, but can we have an open invitation to have you back on?
Oh, by all means. It's a lot of fun talking to you guys.
And we're looking forward to you coming up on Paranormal Challenge because, you know, they've had guests and guest judges, but, I mean, this is definitely one everybody to tune in for. There's so many new people and everybody in the chat room.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't take any calls at this point, and we're counting down into the six-minute mark. I'll have Sophia ask another question, and then I'll bring us out. But thank you, Richard, so much for coming on. And we still have more questions, tons of them, and we do would like to have a third installment with you.
By all means. It's a lot of fun.
Do you have any websites you want to say?
Yeah, I no longer really have a website. It's just not maintained any longer for a variety of different reasons. But I am on Facebook. Anybody who wants to contact me, try that. I also have a ghost blog site that you could try called Phantomology, and another one called Richard Sad's Ghost Blog. You could try those. And I hope to update them with some of these new accounts. I also write for Ghost Village from time to time, and I write for Fate Magazine, though they've kind of fallen on hard times lately. I still write for a variety of different places. So by all means, if anybody wishes to contact me, they can always get me at my website, which is Hank Hunter. At AOL.com. That's H-A-I-N-T, Hunter, at AOL.com. And a word of note, haint is an old English word that means ghost, which, by the way, remarkably, is still used in the South in our United States, but originally it's an ancient English word for ghost. So haint Hunter at AOL.com, and I'll answer questions about ghosts from all over the world. And I've gotten things from China and from a variety of different places.
No, that's great. I mean, even to see that was refreshing to see your email initially. And that's something about Peter James, that when he gave his final tours aboard the Queen Mary, which he founded back in April of 1991, and he gave out his personal home number, he gave out his email address, and typically knowing... You know, I worked at Paramount Pictures, and I know Gower Gulch, the original part off the lot that you're talking about, where they came through and they had the lunches and the cowboy outfits and everything. And it brought back memories for me of hearing those stories as well and seeing the black and white photos. And it's you know, Rudolph Valentino even had a secret tunnel underneath Melrose to the other side to let him out, and that opening's still there. And I got to see that, and it was just, you know, wow, he actually stood here, walked through here. There's so much rich history. I, you know, so to talk to you, I mean, it's just like, you know, it gives me chills each time. But you're like Peter. You give out your contact information. You actually reply to fans, and that's something that I didn't expect, knowing the celebrities that I knew at the time throughout the 90s and the early millennium working at Paramount Pictures, was that wasn't even a possibility. But it's refreshing to know that there's people like you, and there were people like Peter James, and that's what makes you the pioneers within the field today and so sought after for, you know, I think it's an important thing to have paranormal teams have historians. You can't find one like Richard, but to have history behind what you do and look into and ask and find the names and circumstances of death, it takes somebody like a researcher and a historian to really truly bring that out and to be captivating like Richard is right now. And again, we have to go into another date in the near future, I hope, to have Richard back on. It's been refreshing to have you on, Richard, on LifeParanormal.com, and thank you so much for being a guest again.
Okay, no problem. We'll see you there. Happy ghost hunting at Wapurisima.
Well, definitely. And now you've given us fuel. So, Sophia?
I just wanted to say thank you for coming on my show. And we will have fun, and we hope to see you again really soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a great one. I'm curious to see what you guys find at Wapurisima.
No, thank you, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep you updated and posted, and we'll try those little techniques we talked about earlier in the hour.
Why not?
Definitely worth a try. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that was Richard Fennett, and he was gracious enough to be on with us on LifeParanormal.com. We're looking forward to future shows. There's a contest going on. Register to win a on liveparanormal.com. You have to register, like, tweet, friend with liveparanormal.com, and to certainly be eligible to win prizes. And we have them from Alexandra Halzer, the Booth Brothers, us personally, Taps, Ghost Adventures. Everybody's contributing prizes as part of audience appreciation on one of the largest sites of the paranormal, and that's liveparanormal.com. And as well, look for Sophia's monthly article on Haunted Past magazine. She's in the dedicated column, Child Side of the Paranormal. Here's to our upcoming broadcast. We have Ben Hansen of Paranormal Files Factor Faked on Sci-Fi Channel, Larry Coghlan Jr., Barry Fitzgerald coming up from GHI, Lloyd Auerbach, Patrick Burns, Marley Gibson, Jeff Berlanger, Dave Considine, as well as a paranormal researcher, Ghostwriter Home owners John Hucker, John Matakowski, Heartland Ghost, Sally's House homeowners Tony and Deborah Pickman, and many more to follow. So thank you very much for tuning in, and look forward to next week.
This is True TV's haunting evidence investigator, Patrick Burns.
And ghost huntress author, Marley Gibson.
And you're listening to Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli.